This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
I think Americans think it's their right to have cheap gasoline. They fear paying the kind of rates people pay in Europe. They want the independence that comes with automobiles. And I think there are factions in the political discourse that can play to those fears. So, you know, Americans kind of want to have it all. And the question is, you know, who presents the best answer to those needs?
In the past, Sea Change Radio has sought the input of journalists and policymakers on President Obama's environmental record. So far, however, we've not looked at his challenger, Mitt Romney. Many onlookers find themselves baffled as they try to make sense of this candidate's positions on multiple topics, including climate change, the Environmental Protection Agency, and energy policy. Today on Sea Change Radio, we talk with environmental journalist Neela Banerjee, a Washington, D.C.-based reporter for the L.A. Times and Chicago Tribune. Banerjee helps shed some light on the Republican candidate who wants so badly to lead the United States. We discuss Romney's past and current environmental positions and get a glimpse of what a hypothetical Romney presidency might look like from a sustainability perspective. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Neela Banerjee. She's the energy and environmental policy reporter for the LA Times and Tribune Company. Neela, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thanks for having me.
Neela, you recently penned a piece in the LA Times speculating on what Mitt Romney's environmental stances might be if he were to be elected. First, why don't you walk us back and give us a snapshot of the environmental record he held as governor of Massachusetts?
The stance that Mitt Romney occupied on various issues seems to be pretty different from what we're seeing right now. I think the campaign would argue that he's been basically consistent over the last decade or so. And on some issues, he has been, like things like smart growth and development issues in local areas. But I guess one of the big divergences would be on the issue of climate change. I spoke to members of his staff and people in the Massachusetts community, a lot of whom were pretty wary of him. Environmentalists were kind of wary of him because of his business background and so on when he became governor. But they quickly warmed to him because he seemed very committed to dealing with air pollution, including greenhouse gas, dealing with greenhouse gases. And so I spoke to staff members who said that they'd worked for a lot of other governors, but that they couldn't remember when they'd worked with a governor who'd spent so much time going over one particular issue, and that issue was climate change. The state was coming up with a climate action plan, and the governor devoted a lot of time to it.
Was he embracing the reality of climate change, or was he a climate change denier, according to your sources?
What he said, he seemed to accept the scientific consensus on climate change. This was, this was back, in the middle of the last decade, and he seemed to accept the scientific consensus. And so, in 2003, 2004, when these meetings were occurring, and he was really concerned about its effects. He apparently, according to this one staffer I spoke to, seemed to repeat a fair bit that climate change was occurring, but that the United States, as a wealthy country, would find a way to cope with its consequences. But he was really worried about poorer countries, and he kept using Bangladesh as an example, obviously low-lying, flood-prone poor country, that would have a much harder time dealing with climate change. And apparently some of his advisors thought this was odd, but he stuck to his guns, and he would say this very often. And they came out with a climate action plan that was quite aggressive in dealing with climate issues, with greenhouse gas issues. Massachusetts and New York also took the lead in developing the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, which is a local, or a regional rather, cap and trade scheme. And finally, under Romney, the Massachusetts Attorney General, who separately elected, successfully sued the Bush EPA so that greenhouse gases would be regulated under the Clean Air Act. Now, Romney didn't have any say over the court case. I mean, this is something that his AG undertook, and he and his AG were separately elected. But the point being that he also didn't raise a stink about it either. So it signals, you know, quite an aggressive approach towards dealing with greenhouse gas emissions. And the impression that I got from dealing with his old aides is that the idea actually came from George Pataki, another Republican governor, you know, in New York. And I don't think the Romney administration wanted the initiative on something this innovative to be taken over by New York. So they went in on it. Now, I should note that his team, which was led by a prominent Massachusetts environmentalist, worked long and hard on the REGI initiative, crafting it with other states. And at the end, Romney decided not to sign REGI. This is the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative. After Deval Patrick was elected, that was one of the first things he did. And Romney's concern at that time, he said, was the fact that it didn't seem to have enough flexibility for companies in case the trading prices for carbon went way too high. Aides who worked on the issue would argue differently.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking with the environmental policy reporter for the LA Times and the Chicago Tribune, Neela Banerjee. I've heard a lot of Republican quote-unquote jokes about, oh, well, you know, I breathe carbon dioxide, or carbon dioxide's everywhere, and now they want the government to regulate that. And that's a joke that Mitt Romney chimed in on recently.
Yes,
on the campaign trail.
Right.
And even though it's seemingly benign, it actually kind of signaled maybe to the Republican base that he's on board with climate change denial. At least when I hear something like that, that's what it signals to me. What was your reaction when you read that quote?
Well, that I think occurred in the context of the primaries. And whether it's on the Democratic side or on the Republican side, the primaries are usually the base. The Republican base in this case is pretty doubtful of the scientific consensus on climate change. And so one could say, you know, he's playing to the base. And as just as Obama and Hillary Clinton, I'm sure, made comments that ended up being pretty left of the positions they ultimately staked out, you know, or Obama staked out now as president. So it's, you know, so you could see it within that context. And there are people, both people who worked with him in Massachusetts and those who are following him now, that, like, there's a group called Conserve America, which used to be Republicans for Environmental Protection, which is that strain of moderate Republicanism we've seen in this country for so long. And they're hoping that if Romney were elected, that he would tack back to a more moderate position on climate change and on broader environmental issues. And one point that the gentleman from Conserve America made to me, which is something I hear in my office a lot too, is that, you know, very often Congress is, if you have Congress from being controlled by one party and the president from another, Congress will be against the president's policies, because not because they're bad policies or they have an ideological difference, but because it's the other guy. And so there's this sense that maybe if Romney were elected and there was also a Republican Congress, that they would actually strike a more moderate stance and do certain things that would be different from the rhetoric you're hearing now, that in fact they would not gut environmental regulation or scale back the EPA. That, you know, I think that is a that's a perspective that a lot of people have, and governing in this country shows that, you know, it's kind of hard to stake out a radical position on either the far left or the far right. That said, if you look at Romney's website and you look at the issues, he talks about energy. He does not talk about the environment, except to talk about restricting the the power of the Environmental Protection Agency and buying into a narrative that the Republicans have been very good at sticking to, that much of the country's economic woes are due to the EPA and other environmental regulations.
Yeah, it seems kind of like that carbon dioxide joke. The EPA is another kind of red meat issue that they toss to almost joke about how, you know, the EPA is ruining America, or they're handcuffing free Americans from doing what they want to do.
Well, I think the two are related in the sense that the EPA and the scorn towards and skepticism towards EPA and towards climate change are actually related because of this court case that was resolved by the Roberts Court in 2007. The court case I was talking about earlier, Mass versus EPA, which led the EPA to regulate greenhouse gas emissions. And so in Romney's platform, you know, he supports legislation that would strip away EPA authority to regulate greenhouse gas emissions, because at the end of the day, that is what a lot of American industries, the fossil fuel industry and others, fear most, more than regulation of other kinds of air and water pollutants, is what is going to happen with efforts to combat climate change.
Holy Moses, I have been deceived. Now the wind has changed direction, I think I'll have to leave. Won't you please excuse my frankness, but it's not my cup of tea.
Follow the shift to sustainability with Sea Change Radio on Twitter at twitter.com/seachangeradio and on our Facebook page.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking with environmental journalist Neela Banerjee. Neela, I was surprised to learn from your recent article that Mitt Romney actually had some current Obama environmental aides and advisors on hand while he was governor of Massachusetts. Tell us the specifics if you can.
Sure. One of his top environmental staffers, somebody who'd worked in Massachusetts government on environmental issues for a long time, was a woman named Gina McCarthy. And Gina McCarthy now runs the air pollution unit of the Obama EPA. And the air pollution unit is the one that's really coming under a lot of fire from industry and its allies on the Hill for the its efforts to regulate a whole host of air pollutants, including greenhouse gases. But she worked for Romney, I think, you know, maybe for a year or two. And after that, she went off to work for another Republican governor, Jody Rell of Connecticut. So there was a time when, you know, Gina McCarthy, who is now vilified by many, you know, in industry and the Republican Party and some Democrats too, was perfectly acceptable to somebody like Mitt Romney. So that's one person. Another person is John Holdren, who's the White House senior advisor on science and technology. Apparently, Romney turned to him on at least one occasion to discuss climate change. That said, he turned to a lot of people to get input on climate change. But Gina was the thing that was the name that was most provocative in all of this.
And you write in the piece also that some Republicans are wondering if Romney would stick to an energy plan, quote, that was heavily tilted to boosting oil and gas development and reducing regulation, or would he tack back to the moderate positions he once embraced as Massachusetts governor? After talking to a lot of people close to the governor and following the Republican debates and from coming from the primary to now his race against Barack Obama, how would you answer that question? Do you think he would be sticking to the energy plan that he was espousing during the primaries, or is this an etch-a-sketch kind of issue that he would then actually go back to being fairly moderate like he was when he was a Massachusetts governor?
Well, you know, this country is far more right of center than the state of Massachusetts. And I think in some ways Romney was part of a tradition of moderate Republican governors in Massachusetts. And I think that informed the decisions that he made there. And I do think that the chances of him staking out a position, say, closer to his position when he was governor or towards what Obama is occupying now, I think the chances of that are pretty remote. And the reason is that I feel if Republicans continue to have the hold they have in Congress or to improve it, I think there'll be a lot of pressure on Romney to adhere to their positions, regardless of what his own position is. A lot of it depends on how strong an executive he would be. That's the other point. We don't really know that yet. So I think his party has shifted way right on environmental and energy issues. And I think the other thing is that, as we're seeing in the wake of Citizens United, there's a lot of money flooding in, especially on the GOP side, and a lot of it is from the energy sector. I mean, most of the people, or the biggest sector giving money to Romney is you know, Wall Street, obviously, but a lot of the money that's coming in is from energy. And what I mean is from traditional fossil fuel and energy sectors. And he's gotten a lot of support from traditional fossil fuel magnates like the Koch brothers. And I think that is also going to shape the policies a Romney administration would pursue. And as you can tell, the Republicans in their ads against Obama and the dark money groups, the independent, you know, quote unquote social welfare groups, a lot of their ads are actually about energy. And they really want to differentiate between Romney's vision of energy in the future and the environment and Obama's vision. Whether that's going to work for them, I'm not sure. Whether it resonates with Americans, I'm not sure. But they're putting a lot of eggs in that basket. So I think there's a lot of pressure to take a more traditional fossil fuel based business as usual approach to energy environmental policy than there is to take a more moderate approach that would build in acceptance of climate change into its policies.
You mentioned that the country is right center of Massachusetts, but I would challenge that in terms of issue by issue. I think Massachusetts is not as lefty and out of touch with mainstream America. If you actually talk to Americans from the reddest states on issue by issue, whether it be trying to rein in campaign finance issues like through the Citizens United or taxing the wealthiest Americans back to how they used to be taxed 10 years ago or investing in alternative energy. I think if we actually went line by line on a lot of these issues, I think that Americans are not really as right center as we all tend to see when.
Well, I mean, the point that you make on an issue by issue basis, voting on an issue by issue basis, or thinking along the lines of issues as opposed to a more holistic approach, you know, it illustrates a particular tension. I mean, we've just saw it with the healthcare debate, right? Where if you take apart the healthcare reform bill and you ask Americans whether they approve or disapprove of different aspects of it, by and large, they approve of most of it. But when then you ask them globally, do you like the healthcare bill? They say, no, we don't. The majority says. And I think
what clicks in their mind, is it the money from a Citizens United where they're allowed to just donate, or do you think there's more to it?
I think with energy, it's murkier because we haven't had a kind of signature piece of legislation that people that Congress and the president have fought over like they did with the Affordable Care Act to really see where Americans fall when push comes to shove and to really see who excels at crafting the narrative that resonates most with the American people. So, there have been polls that show that for all of these efforts to make the Solyndra scandal stick with the administration, it doesn't seem to be doing that much. damage. I don't know how much damage it's doing to Obama, but it's certainly, from what I've heard, it's not doing a whole lot of damage to the notion of solar energy or promoting renewables. There is a lot of skepticism about fossil fuels. But at the same time, you know, Americans want cheap gasoline. I think Americans think it's their right to have cheap gasoline. They fear paying the kind of rates people pay in Europe. They want the independence that comes with automobiles. And I think there are factions in the political discourse that can play to those fears. So you know, Americans kind of want to have it all. And the question is, you know, who presents the best answer to those needs? You know, that's what I think is still unclear, is how Romney's stance on energy versus Obama's stance on energy might play with people. I mean, that said, right now, you know, the big thing is the economy. Now, the ads that we've been seeing about energy and about the environment have tried to tie that to the sluggish recovery and say that, you know, regulations on those fronts have somehow contributed to the sluggish recovery. Whether people are buying it, I just don't know.
Then as it was, then again it will be. Though the course may change sometimes, rivers always reach the sea. Blind skies of fortune, each has separate ways. On the wings of maybe,
to listen to Sea Change Radio anytime, anyplace, just subscribe to our free podcast. Simply follow the link from seachangeradio.com or search for us in the iTunes podcast directory.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking with environmental and energy policy reporter Neela Banerjee. It's interesting to when I hear you talk about how Americans are afraid of change. If I can just put on my Frank Luntz or George Lakoff messaging hat for a moment. When you hear the term climate change, you would think that that may not be such a great way to phrase it. Obviously, it's an improvement over global warming, because every time there was a cold snap in the East Coast, people could say, well, Al Gore was obviously wrong because it's very cold here today. Or also the term global. Americans aren't the most globally thinking people. But I remember in the 70s when the Clean Air Act and the Clean Water Act and a lot of these very progressive environmental policies were pushed forward, we never heard those kind of points. We just heard the word pollution. Do you think there's a way for progressives to inject the word pollution more effectively into the narrative?
That's a really good point, because I think when Mitt Romney and others talk about, well, carbon dioxide is what we all exhale and trees use it in photosynthesis and what's the big deal, I don't think people really understand the science of it or the context in which they've heard about carbon dioxide is, you know, this is what our bodies produce. So how can, you know, how can this be a bad thing, right? And so, you know, we just exhale it into the air. Why is this a bad thing? And I think I think that scientists and politicians and regulators who want Americans to understand the threats posed by climate change do have to do a better job of articulating what that really means for people's lives. And I think scientists are pretty good at it, actually. There's some scientists out there who, you know, I mean, the thing about scientists is that they're so respectful of nuance that I think the clarity of their message gets muted a bit as they, you know, as they bring nuance into it. And I think, you know, for their own consciences, they actually, you know, they have to. I mean, for their they have to talk about nuance. But other people can be clearer about it. And I think that there needs to be a better job done to explain, you know, if the world's temperature is going to rise by, you know, 2 degrees, let's say 4 degrees Fahrenheit from 150 years ago. This is what it's going to mean for the meat and the milk you buy in the supermarket. This is what it's going to mean for, you know, your trip to the beach. This is what it's going to mean for the kind of sicknesses that that mosquitoes could bring to you over the summer. You know, all of these things, which scientists and others are looking at right now, but Americans aren't aware of. So
it's time to bring back the Native American guy with a tear running down his
face.
Yeah,
that was more litter, but like.
But it resonated with a little kid like myself. You know?
Oh, it totally resonated with me too. But the other thing too, when I first started covering this beat, like I couldn't understand when, you know, Lisa Jackson kept getting called up to Congress and she would keep talking about, you know, carbon dioxide and greenhouse gases as a pollutant and it endangered public welfare. I mean, I could sort of see it in a broad sense, but I was like, well, what does this actually have to do with health? And she said, you know, and finally she made it clear. And I thought, good God, you know, why does it take you guys so long to make this clear, so that, you know, average people like me and others who might be paying attention would understand this? And basically what she said was that, you know, higher average temperatures in the summer will exacerbate the impact of other pollutants that affect people with respiratory illness or who have, you know, weaker or compromised immune systems. And so all of a sudden then the light bulb went on. It's like, oh, of course. So if you're prone to asthma or you know people who are prone to asthma and they have a harder time in the summer and you know what it's like on hot days when, you know, when they're having trouble breathing, oh my gosh, it's going to be hotter. It's going to be even more difficult for them. And that, but it took a long time of, you know, for her to say this clearly. And somebody just had to phrase the question the right way for her to give this very simple answer. And that doesn't happen enough. But I have to say that, you know, between the mild winter we had, I mean, sadly, you know, weather determines people's acceptance or denial of climate change. And, you know, if we're already starting to see the effects, then the mild winter and the heat wave now, whether it is conclusively because of climate change or not, I think scientists are still, you know, I think they wouldn't go that far, but it's certainly helping to shape people's thinking.
You wrote about how Governor Romney said that he won't really push for alternative fuels and alternatives to fossil fuels unless they're price competitive. But isn't that kind of a catch-22? They can't become price competitive unless government puts their weight behind them.
Right. I think the issue is that there is an unwillingness amongst traditional energy companies to recognize how much government support has helped them, everything from subsidies and tax breaks to the fact that federal lands are opened up for oil and gas and coal development. So there's, you know, it isn't an even playing field. And I think you're seeing a lot more virulence in the rhetoric from the Republican and from the Republican side and from talk radio and industry, because the cost of alternative energy has been falling. You are getting economies of scale. You are getting people more interested in having renewable sources of energy. And so before, when you could dismiss things like wind and solar as eccentricities on the margin, you can't do that as easily anymore. You know, states have renewable energy standards, people are ginning up production, people are buying things, and all of a sudden it starts becoming more of a threat to the bottom line. Now, there's some companies that are trying to do all of the above. They're trying to do fossil fuels and alternatives, but there are others that are not. And I think those you would find in the camp most strenuously arguing against renewables.
Well, it's going to be fascinating to see how these issues rear their head in the months ahead as we watch the election unfold. Neela Banerjee, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise.
Additional music by Joe Henry, Aretha Franklin, and Led Zeppelin.
Check out our website at seachangeradio.com.
That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.